shortly, but before we open the good book, I would like to take a minute or two to give an editorial, if you want to call it that, and an invitation and an appeal to our church family. For the past year, church life has been very different, as has every aspect of our life. But things are changing, and it's for the better. Do you remember what Sundays used to be? All of our lifetime, Sundays were that special days where families would set that day aside to worship God. And in this church, for many years, 3 and 4 generations of families every Sunday would gather together and worship. It was the Sunday experience. It involved our children learning their favorite Bible stories. Our kids and our grandkids, even our babies and our nurseries. It was the Sunday experience. And I think most of us perhaps took it for granted after we lost that freedom. But I'm appealing to our church family today, especially those of you who are watching, and thank you for watching. We understand it's been quite a year, but it is time for many of you who are watching to exercise your faith and come back to church. It is safer to worship God here in this church than it is to shop at Walmart, to pump gas at the local convenience store. It's even safer to worship God here than it is to go to your doctor's office. Let's roll the tape. I want everybody watching to see what we go through to make this place safe for you. We'll bring that up here so that everybody can get a close-up of. Between Sunday morning services, we fumigate and disinfect. We kill every airborne virus that has snuck into the building. Every surface, there's our kids' church, and our children are socially distanced. They have their own space there. Our kids' church is back open and functioning well, thanks to Miss Lori Osborne, who oversees that ministry with the help of an army of volunteers, many of you who serve in that important area. Every hall, every classroom, every desktop, every chair, every square foot of air space in this building is disinfected every virus killed before you walk in the door on Sunday mornings. It is safer to worship God here than it is to do anything anywhere. We go to the pains of providing that for you. Now, we give great respect to those who are sick and their health is compromised. And many of our members are dealing with that. And we have no judgment. Believe me, we're so happy to stay connected with you on live stream and in every way, anyway. Thank God for the body being connected. And so some of you are not ready to come back yet because of a compromised immune system. We understand that. You will never find another church with less judgmentalism than Abundant Life Church. So we respect your decision, but it is time for many who are watching to use your faith and come back to church. It will be a test of your faith. It works like this. Many of you remember, since the shutdown and the lockdown. Remember that first time you had to go to the grocery store and you prayed, oh God, forgive me of every sin I've ever committed, please, before I venture out, and keep me safe at the grocery store today. Did the same thing everywhere you went. Walmart. Use that same faith. Many of you are ready. You know it right now. You have a witness in your spirit. I'm not talking to everybody, but those of you who need to hear this, you have a witness right now. It's your time to use your faith. Pray up if you need to, and then believe God to keep you safe as you obey His word in assembling together for worship. Now, let me also say this. Many of our people, including moi, have had the virus. It's a thing. We've survived. But here's the truth about our church this past year. We have never had one single coronavirus case contact traced back to our church. We have no evidence. DHEC has not called us and said, a few of your members have tested positive for the coronavirus and we've traced it back to your church. Now, they have called others. They've even called doctor's offices and told the doctor's offices, we've had a positive case from a patient who was in your office last week. But we've not had a single case confirmed. We've never hosted a super spreader event here at our church, and we don't plan to. Now, if you're having symptoms, fever, whatever, stay away from him. We give you extra week. But you know, since last March, 1 year ago, we shut down. I think 10 or 12 Sundays came and went with the doors of our church locked on Sunday mornings. And everybody was worshiping from their homes. And thank God for the faithful team. Those you do see, those you don't see, who were faithful during that time so that we could bring worship and the word to you in your homes. But in the past year since we've reopened, and by the way, those of you who are watching, our seats are spread out. We've removed half of our rows. We ask you to wear a mask when you come in the door. And when you get to your seat, if you will look around and think you're safe and distanced appropriately from somebody, you're welcome to take it off. When you leave your seat to go out, put it back on. I don't know if that's phase two or what, but we have everything. We have some in the church who wear a mask all the time. Then we have some in the church who don't wear a mask any of the time unless the law will require it. This is an opportunity to serve those in the church who are weaker than you are. If it makes your neighbor more comfortable, and if they ask you, don't fight over it. Be unselfish and serve those who are weaker in the church. What little time we do spend together right now. And since we've reopened, Pastor Steve, correct me if I don't think I've heard a single sneeze, not a single cough. Oh, my God. Elizabeth, I should have known she'd be the one. But we don't spread the virus. We spread the gospel, and we welcome you back. You have an invitation. Next Sunday is Palm Sunday, and the week after that is Easter Sunday. So wake up, America, and welcome back to church. Use your faith and come on back. You'll know when it's your time. Let me get into the word of the Lord this morning. How many of you have a need in your life? You don't have to be specific what kind it is, but you have a very real need, and it has concerned you enough that you've gone to the Lord in prayer and you've asked Him to meet your need. Raise your hand if that's any of you. Then I do have a word of instruction for those of us who have prayed and are still waiting for God to answer a prayer. And it's this: trust God to do it His way. Believers are notorious. We don't even realize we do it. But our MO when we have a need, even a desperate need, is to rush into the presence of God and ask Him to meet that need. And while we're there, we may not speak it audibly. We may not even consciously be aware of this terminology, but the posture of our heart is at the same time asking Him to meet our need. We're good to tell Him how to do it, when to do it, and who to use to do it. We have our own predisposition and our own expectation of how and when and who God's going to use when He's meeting our need. Now, I want to give a shocker to you, but of course it's biblical, and you can find it all over the Scripture, but this is the truth. God does not share revelation with all of His people in equal measure. You have a revelation I don't. I may have one you don't. That's why unity is so important, because when every single member of the body is in unity and working together, then all of the revelation God has comes to the body. But God does not share His revelation with all of His people in equal measure. We'll go back to the day of Moses leading the children of Israel. Moses had a more intimate relationship with God than any of the other Israelites. And this is how it affected his life. In Psalm 103, verse 7, it says, God made known His ways to Moses, but God made known His acts to the children of Israel. Moses was close enough to God that God revealed the way He worked, the method He used. While everybody else was at the bottom of the mountain, Moses was on top of the mountain, close enough to God for God to show Moses the ways of God. All of the other children of Israel had no clue about the ways of God. They were aware only of the actions of God. Two different categories. It's easy for a non-believer to see the actions of God. Look at the sunrise. Look at the birth of a baby. Look at the beautiful mountain landscape. I mean, you can go in any direction, and even a non-believer can see what God has done. But God reserves the revelation of how He does it, what His thoughts are, His plans, the road He chooses to take in getting to your house with the miracle you need. He reserves that for those who have a more intimate relationship with Him. In Exodus chapter 33 and verse 13, Moses prayed and said, listen, show me your way that I might know you. He didn't say, show me your acts, because everybody sees the hand of God powerfully displayed, even in nature. But Moses said, show me your way. I want to talk about God's way today. Show me your way that I might know you. And when Moses prayed that prayer, God took him to the top of the mountain and showed him His ways. There's a difference in knowing God's actions and knowing His ways. By definition, the way in the Hebrew language is defined as a road taken, or a path taken. A way in the Old Testament was a selected route of travel. It was literally a road or a path. It was the way. And that terminology became symbolic for centuries. And then over in the New Testament, the writer of Hebrews referred to the Christian lifestyle as a new and living way. A road traveled, a path taken. And then Jesus is famous for declaring of himself, I am the way. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13 gives us this promise. Says, God will not allow you to be tempted and tested beyond what you're able to endure, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape. Not a way, the way. The word way is a good word today. Trusting God to do it his way. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 3 says, he shall teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. Now, when we go to God and ask him to take action, to deliver us, to meet a need in our life or in the life of someone we loved, we often make a mistake while we're there subconsciously of expecting him to do it a certain way. We tell him how to do it and when to do it. Now, it has been said, and it's a true statement, God involves himself intimately in the affairs of men. We see that playing out in our life individually and on a global scale. Thank God, the hand of God comes to our rescue and is there for us. Thank God, we're a group of people that know whose name to call on in our time of trouble. And we're grateful for that. God involves himself in our affairs. But it's the how he involves himself that trips us up. I've got scripture on it. And then I've got personal stories. I'm sure you do too. You can look back in your rearview mirror and remember the times that you were desperate and went to God in need, and over a period of time, it may not have been when you wanted, and it probably wasn't how you expected it, but God brought closure to that season of your life. It's a former thing now because God came through for you, but he did it differently than you might have expected him to do it. God's method is not always the logical or the reasonable way to do things. Don't we have trouble with that? You know, do you ever feel tempted just to be honest with God when you're waiting for a miracle and you know he's your only hope? Do you ever feel tempted to say, God, can you do the math? I mean, it's simple math. Look at this number right here. That's what I got. And look at this number right here. That's what I need. I mean, it's simple math, Lord. But God does not always employ the methods and the ways that are logical or reasonable. Sometimes his methods in meeting our needs are unorthodox and unconventional. Shocker. God's people were in trouble, the children of Israel, thousands of years ago. They're on the brink of extinction. Somebody needed to be used by God to save God's people, and God used a harlot. Nobody expected him to do it that way. Another example. A prophet was temporarily blinded and couldn't hear clearly from God. It should have been obvious what the prophet heard and what he said, but he was in a funk and needed a visit and a word from God, and God used a jackass. And that's the King James word to speak to a prophet. The baby God had chosen at his birth to become the great leader of Israel and to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt's bondage from under the hand of a tyrant named Pharaoh was Moses. And Moses' birth mother had to abandon him. And God chose Pharaoh's own daughter to find that baby and to breastfeed that baby and to raise and nurture that baby, and he became the great leader, Moses. But God used the most unlikely person, Pharaoh's daughter. Don't put God in a box and miss your miracle. Trust God to do it his way. And God may not answer your request the way. Everybody say way. The way you expect. How many of us miss God's best because we thought it would happen another way? We wasn't even expecting this. So sometimes a miracle will get real close to you and pass you by because you weren't expecting it and you didn't take that window of opportunity to lay hold and grab it for yourself, and you were looking over somewhere else thinking, sure to God going to do it over there, when it passed you by. Don't put God in a box and miss your miracle. God provided food for Elijah by sending a raven, not an eagle. Good thing he was in a good mood that day, Elijah. Lord, I thank you for sending this bird here with my food again today. You know, he could have been puffed up. God, do you know who I am? Hello. I'm the number one prophet in the world right now. I'm the one with the responsibility to hear you speak and then go before your people and tell them what you said. Hello. I'm the prophet Elijah. I don't like that common bird bringing me my food. I am who I am. I think at least a red bird or a blue jay or a robin or an eagle, a bald eagle. That's how I want you to bring me my daily portion. But no, God chose a bird that perhaps most would not have chosen. Trust God to do it his way. Now in John chapter 9, and last Sunday, Brenda and I took the weekend off, and that's all right. Thank you for not judging me on that. I say off, we worshiped right along with you. We, 10 o'clock, we were online, we were out of town, but we couldn't wait. We just enjoyed it, and I do get it. I mean, you can hear from God. You can worship God from your house. No judgment here on all of that. And Lawrence Tuning brought a great word. And when Lawrence started talking about this miracle of Jesus healing the man who was born blind in John chapter 9, I thought, oh, Lawrence, please don't say too much about that. Because I knew today I was going to talk about this man who was born blind. But Lawrence did an excellent job. I don't need to repeat anything he said. You know, the man who was born blind, from birth blind. Now he was an adult and he was a beggar. The story was that Jesus walked through his community and and saw the blind man, went up to him and began to heal the blind man who was born that way. And Jesus did it in such an unprecedented, it had never happened this way before, unorthodox method. Imagine yourself being blind, born that way. You don't even know what red or blue or gray even mean. You don't know what it means to walk into a dark room and cannot see anything and then light a candle or flip a switch and all of a sudden you can see everything clear. You have no you were born blind, but you could hear. Imagine this man who was born blind, begging, sitting by the road. Jesus comes up, and this blind man gets excited because he knows Jesus is here and all things are possible, and he had heard about others. But he hears Jesus. Get ready to spit. He couldn't see it, but he could hear it. Have you ever heard anybody spit? Have you ever heard your own self spit? You know, there's a sound that precedes the spittle. And here's this man who was born blind, does not know what a ray of light even looks like. And he hears Jesus spit on the ground. And then Jesus stoops down and gets the mud and clay mingled with his spit and crams it in the blind man's eyes. Now, the blind man really has two things against him. First of all, he's already blind. Secondly, even if he wasn't blind, he can't see now because he's got mud all in his eyes. They would lock us up if we did that these days. But Jesus spit on the mud and put the mud in the blind man's eyes and gave him an instruction. And it worked for him. In John chapter 9 and verse 7, Jesus said to this man, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So, and I like just how simple this is. So he went and washed and came back seeing. A simple instruction, and he followed that formula. He went and he washed and he came back seeing. Now, the man who was healed, Lawrence did a great job bringing this out, was brought before the religious leaders, the Pharisees. And they questioned him. Were you really born blind? I mean, we don't even believe all this. And this man, Jesus, he's a sinner, we think. And even if you were healed by this man, he broke the law of Moses because it's the Sabbath and the law says we shouldn't do things like this on Sunday or Saturday, as was the case maybe in their day. Religion had a problem with the way God did it. Religion had a problem with the timing that God did it. Jesus broke their religious rule about the Sabbath. And then I really loved it last Sunday when Lawrence mentioned that the Pharisees, those religious people, wanted to dismiss this entire miracle because of a technicality. Well, Jesus did it on Sunday. We're not going to allow that, not in our religious group. And later in that story, the man was kicked out of the church. Imagine how far away from the center of truth a group of people have to be when God performs a sovereign miracle in a different method, perhaps, and then the whole religious system says, let's excommunicate him. He's no longer a member of our church. How sick can religious people be? They excommunicated the healed man, took his church membership from him. And here's something. John chapter 9 and verse 16, it says, and there was a deep division of opinion among them. Religion's awful. A deep division of opinion among them. They were arguing. It was like a tug of war. Some saying, well, he has to be the Son of God. Only God could do something like this. Others were saying, he's a sinner for sure. The law, he's broken the law of Moses. Right here, I mean, there's a slam dunk. No questions asked. He's a sinner. And there was a deep division of opinion among them. Now, whenever there is a deep division among religious circles, it is sometimes a sign that God is doing a new thing in a different way than what the religious people expect. Now, about this miracle, it was unprecedented. Jesus had opened blinded eyes before, but never by spitting on the ground and shoving mud in a blind man's eyes. Jesus had never done it before. Elijah had never done it before. Moses had never done it before. No Old Testament prophet had ever performed a miracle this way. Are we open for God to use a new method, if he wants to, in meeting our needs, in giving us our miracle? We must trust God to do it his way. And then, in the Old Testament, another example. Naaman, the leper. You can read it later in 2 Kings chapter 5. This great man named Naaman was commander of the Syrian army. The Bible says, and I quote, he was a great and honorable man. He was a mighty man of valor. He was the great champion in war, .. but a leper. How sad. Everything in his world was perfect, except the one thing that was terminal, the one thing that he couldn't do anything about, the one thing that branded him hopeless in his culture. And at that time, he was a leper. But God was at work behind the scenes. You know, you're needing a miracle right now, many of you. You can't see it. You can't see the hand of God working on you, but he's at work right now. You can't even see it, but underneath the surface and behind the scenes, God is working for you right now. But he may be doing it in a different way than you have expected him. Here's how God met Naaman's need and healed him of leprosy. He had gone out to war and it had a great victory. And he brought back captive some men and women from the battlefield. One of those was a young woman that he appointed to live in his home and to be the housemaid and serve his wife. She was a Jewish girl. So God had an insider right then. She waited on Naaman's wife. And she, of course, knew everything about Naaman, how great he was, how honorable he was, how respected he was. And also, she knew, but he's a leper. And so this little Jewish girl that God got on the inside of that situation said to Naaman's wife, if only your husband could go see the prophet Elisha, the prophet would heal him of his leprosy. And Naaman must have been desperate, because when he heard his housemaid say that to his wife, he took it seriously, and the desperate part of him took it to the king. told the king, I've got this Jewish girl living at my house. We captured her when we won a victory over Israel a while back. She's a great little girl taking care of my wife. And she knows a prophet, Elisha, and she told me that if I could go see Elisha, he would heal me of my leprosy. And he asked the king, can I get your blessing to go? And the king said, not only do you have my blessing to go see this prophet, but here is some silver. Take that to him. And here is some gold. Take that to him. And here is a letter, an official letter from our kingdom signed by my hand, the king, to the king of that nation. I want you to go and get your healing. So, Naaman, the leper, makes that long journey, gets to Elisha's house. And the Bible says his chariots and horses bringing right up to the door of Elisha's house. And he knocks on the door. Elisha's servant comes to the door. And Naaman was upset because Elisha himself did not come. Have you ever been disappointed with God, just ready to throw it all away because of the person you thought should or didn't? And the very person you thought you never did? Well, it was a test of Naaman's pride. Naaman went to Elisha's door, and Elisha sent a messenger, found out what he wanted, goes back in, speaks to the prophet. The messenger comes back, opens the door, says to Naaman outside the door, never even invited in, go and wash in the Jordan River 7 times and you'll be cleaned. Well, even when you're desperate, even when you're terminal, even when everybody calls you hopeless in your situation, Naaman was all of that, but still had some pride that was stubborn. In 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 11, it says, when Naaman heard that, he became furious and went away and said, indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand. Here's what. Here it is, Naaman. I'm a leper. I've got my faith working for me. The handmaiden said, go see the prophet and he'll heal me. So here's what's going to happen. And he's telling it right here. I thought to myself, I said to myself, he'll come out. He's going to stand. He's going to call on the name of the Lord his God. He's going to wave his hand and heal me. Boy, did he have that one wrong. But isn't that us? Oh, Lord, I got a horrible disease. Okay, I'm going to find out where Benny Hinn is, and I'm going to fly to that city, and Benny Hinn's going to come out at just at the right time, and that organ's going to be playing like this in the choir, and Benny Hinn's going to take his coat off and wave it around and like that over me, and then Benny Hinn's going to come up and go over me, and oh, I'm going to get my healing at a Benny Hinn crusade. Now, I love Benny Hinn. Brenda and I met him before he was famous. Spent 3 hours with him and couldn't understand a word he said. He has gotten much better at English, and he's a good man. I'm not disparaging him at all, but I'm just saying we have our own expectation. So did Naaman. He said, oh, I'm going to get to the prophet's house. He's going to come out to me. He's going to stand up right before me. He's going to say a prayer and call on the name of the Lord, his God, and then he's going to take his hand. And he's going to wave it all over the place, and then I'm going to be clean from my leprosy. I've asked God to do it, and I've told him how. But Naaman was furious when that didn't happen. Naaman had his own plan. He expected a different method. And the very next verse after this one says, Naaman turned and went away in a rage. Can you imagine? I'm dying here. I'm terminal. Doctors can't help me. It's the end of the road unless I have a divine miracle. I need to know that there is a God and the hand of God can deliver me. You would think, I'll take it any way you want it. But no. He got furious when it didn't happen the way he expected. He turned and went away in a rage. Finally, his servants came to him and said, if the prophet had told you to do something great, wouldn't you have done that? Then how much more should you do a simple thing if that's the instruction the prophet has given you? So he repented, which means changed his mind and his heart. 2 Kings 5:14 says, so he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Now see, God came through for him, but not in the way he expected. We've got to trust God to do it his way. I remember our bishop, and I'm closing, our great bishop, Houston Miles, who went home to be with the Lord 3 months ago, meant a lot to the kingdom, has ministered here more than a dozen times in our 35 years as a local church. I remember him telling the story how when he was a young minister, had just been assigned his first church, fresh out of Bible school, newly married, hardly any money, just a small, simple season in his life, and the transmission in his car broke, and he did not have the money to get it fixed. And he said, in his testimony, sharing this, he said, I didn't know what else to do, but I laid my hands on that car, and I prayed for that transmission to be fixed. And he said, supernaturally, God healed that transmission. And he said, now, but I understand. He said, now, these many years later, if my car breaks down, I take it to the garage and I have money in my bank to pay a mechanic. And he said, either way, God has met my need. Years ago, a few decades, I had a need. I had a need. Brenda was the only one that knew about it. And nobody else knew, but I didn't share it with anybody. Didn't share it with anybody in the church, anybody out of the church. It was a need, though. And I went to the Lord. I said, oh, God, I know you can do something about this. And I was desperate. My phone rang. And this was right before caller ID came out. Because had I seen the name of the man calling me, I would not have answered, probably real quick. But I didn't know who was calling. I picked up the phone at home. It was a man. And I didn't know him very well. I knew him more by reputation. What others had said about him and what others thought about him. But based on what I had heard others say, I thought, oh, that will stay clear of him. He's the kind of a man in my mind, the perception in my mind at the time was if I see him walking down the street, I'm going to cross the street and go around him, that kind of a fella. My phone rang. And he said, Carl, I'd like to meet with you. Just a matter of fact, I thought, oh, God, I've got all this going on. I don't need anything from him. So I indulged him. I went and met with him that day. And the bottom line is that man that I never thought could or never thought would have was used by God. He met my need in that meeting. Now, God met my need. But I am learning. It's useless to tell him how to do it and when to do it and who to use. Oh, Lord. And then I'll close with this story. We all know it. And Brenda tells me, you talk about it too much. She told me that yesterday. And I'm sorry, but you did tell me that. Now, don't go on too long about that because people already know. And thank you. She's my director. And I love you for it. So because of her advice, you are getting out about 10 minutes early today. Because I'm gonna follow her instruction. I'm going to be brief. But we were down on House Springs Road in the early days of our church. We would have been happy to stay there. We had 4 acres. We were going to build one more building down there and live happily for the rest of our life down there when God had a different plan. And that led us, of course, through a word from our bishop, who was here one time and suggested, before you spend any more money in this location, you might want to get a better location for your permanent church property. And just based on the wisdom of that man and our relationship to that man, we heard what he said, and we began making calls and checking around, and that led us to 21 acres right down the street here, where Walmart is now. And I had a plan. I was a young pastor. I still am pretty young. I mean, back then I was even younger than I am now. But I had a plan, and here was my plan, because this is how most churches do. Lord, okay, here's the deal. We're gonna venture out, and we're going to buy property. It's going to be expensive, and oh, Lord, it's going to take a lot of money to build a nice building on that end. I mean, but God, I'm believing now we can do it. And here's what we will do. We will sign to buy the property, and then I'll go before the people. We'll pass out pledge cards. It will be a capital stewardship campaign. Now, for those of you who've been in other churches and you've participated in a capital stewardship campaign, it works like this. You get a pledge card from the pastors or the staff, and they're asking you to give above and beyond your normal level of giving toward our building program, and give sacrificially. Give until it helps, and then give more. Give until it hurts. You've been in services like that. I said, Lord, we'll just have to really encourage our people to pledge and to give over and above and beyond their normal level of giving. But Lord, I'm ready to do it. And that was my plan. Other churches had done it. The other great churches. In fact, when Brenda and I were members of Evangel Cathedral in Spartanburg, they built a 5,000-seat auditorium. It was the largest church building in South Carolina when they built it. And they built it by raising, back in the 80s, $3.5 million from the congregation. It was a capital stewardship campaign. So I was ready to do it. I was ready to go to the printer and say, well, I need some pledge cards and make the line really long. They have to fill. They're going to need some zeros even before and after the decimal. We got a lot of money to raise, but I think we can do it. But after we had signed to buy the 21 acres with our thoughts and with our plans, we're going to pay for dirt for 5 years, and then after we get out of the hole that much, we'll see where we are and how soon we can start building a building. God had a better way. God had a better way. I began getting calls from people in powerful positions and representing Walmart. First meeting I had with their rep here in Florence, as he just told me bluntly, said, Walmart wants to build a super center on the property your church just financed. And my immediate response is, oh, well, I got a plan. Here's what we're going to do. I've already told the Lord. How are we going to do it? We've already got the property under We're paying on a loan for that right now. We haven't paid anything, really, but promised to. But our people are going to start giving a lot of money. We're going to pressure our people to fill out a pledge card, and we're going to do it. And then he said, he had a little calculator. He punched in a number, and he turned that calculator around and showed it to me and said, here's what we're willing to pay you for that property. And when I saw that number, it was four times what we had just paid for. Four times. And God changed his mind about how we were going to build this building. Oh, no, really, Carl changed his mind. But, I mean, God had a way. It was different than the way we had thought. We had it all figured out. We told God what we were going to do. Well, now, we need your help, of course. Can I tell you something funny? And I know I shouldn't. It just comes to me right now. One traveling minister told me one time. He used to pray. Oh, God, I'm going to churches to minister. Please go with me. Please let your presence be with me. And he said, one day I just told the Lord, and he was joking, Lord, you know, I hope you will go, but if you don't, I have to go. This is how I make my living, but I hope you go with me. And I thought, oh, well, he's honest, isn't he? But I went to the Lord and said, thank you that your ways are higher than mine. And because of God's method in that miracle for our church, here we are today and debt-free, don't owe a dime on anything. God has given us the best location right here at the entrance to our city. Everybody from the south has to pass by us on their way into town, giving us high visibility in the city. In fact, for many, many years, we were known as the Walmart Church because everybody in town knew Walmart had blessed our church. And here's the bottom line. We would have settled for less, but God's way gave us more. And whatever need you're facing right now today, you could settle for less if you try to do it your way, but let God do it his way, and he will give you more. I'm going to close with three verses. It'll help me to close if you stand. Ephesians chapter 1, beginning at verse 17. This is the prayer Paul prayed for the church. This is the prayer Paul prayed for us. That the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give to you the spirit of wisdom and revelation in the knowledge of him, the eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of his calling, what are the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints. I like every one of them words right there. Whoa, that was some good words put together right there. Gets even better right now. And what is the exceeding greatness of his power toward us who believe according to the working of his mighty power. I'm telling you, with a God like that, with a God that's that powerful, with the God who has ways and means and methods far above what we're capable of ever asking or thinking or even imagining, the little problem you're dealing with at your house is not a problem at all to him. Trust God to do it his way.